Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Wes, and I'm here, as always, with the wonderful Ben. How you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Wes?
I'm doing pretty good in the middle of a musical theater production, helping out with that, so I'm a little exhausted, but pretty good other than that.
Yeah, I just got back from vacation yesterday as well, so I'm also a little tired, but it's okay. You know, I'm glad to be playing games again, because I didn't really play any games on vacation. In fact, like, I was in Yosemite National Park, and there's pretty much no internet there.
Yeah.
I didn't do too much.
I know from travel vlogs of people playing Pokemon Go in national parks, it's hit or miss.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's cool. Yeah, glad to be back playing games. Always good to take a little bit of a break from them, though. But what have you been playing recently now that you're back, or maybe just before the vacation?
Well, I have been playing the same game just before vacation, and as soon as I got back, I played it again. And that's Guild Wars 2.
Ooh, okay.
I finally found an MMO that I wanted to play for more than like an hour. Looking at you, Elder Scrolls Online. But yeah, I'm playing Guild Wars 2. I own the game, and I bought it when it was still like a paid game. I think it's free to play now, or at least the base part of it. But I bought it like years and years and years ago, and I played it a little bit, maybe 5 or 10 hours, and then I didn't play anymore. And I've thought, you know, let's go back to it. Let's see what it's all about. And I'm really enjoying it. I now have like a level 60 something character.
Nice.
And I've been playing it like nonstop. There's just a whole lot of decisions in it that I really, really like, that I'm like, this is exactly what I'm looking for. For example, I picked a class and then it tells me what weapons I should use for that class. It's like, yes, thank you. You're trying to let me succeed in playing this game. There's like a pretty cool story that's all voice acted and has some cutscenes, and there's a lot of decisions in the story that you kind of pick. Essentially, kind of you like pick a scenario that you then do. Hmm. So if you replay the game with other classes, you can end up picking lots of different scenarios and get almost a completely different story. And I'm like, hey, that's cool. Lots of replayability there. Also, just like so many nice convenience things, like all of your crafting materials, you can send them directly to the bank. It's like, yes, oh, I don't have to like have my bag slots filled with crafting items. That was cool. Also, like when you're at a crafting table, they're all just like available. There's not many crafting tables like in the game, like they're only in big cities where a bank would be anyway. So it just makes sense, you know, it's like just saving the player time to go to the bank and back. Unlike something like WoW, where you have a Hearthstone that you can kind of teleport once every hour, in this game you can just teleport whenever you want. It just costs a little bit of gold, and that's fine. It's really nice. It's convenient. I also really like the quest system, because in World of Warcraft, a quest might be go kill 12 tigers. I don't know. And that's your quest. And it always feels like kind of random. It's like, why 12 tigers? Like, why not 10 tigers? Like, it just is kind of weird. But in this game, it doesn't tell you how much of whatever you need to do you have to do in order to complete it. So it might just say, like, you know, help out the farmer with his field. And you can do that multiple ways. Maybe that's like killing bandits that are in there. Or maybe it's digging up wormholes and then killing the worms. Or like replanting crops. Like there's like non-combat ways to help, and then there's combat ways to help. And whenever you do one of those actions, a bar will fill up. And when that bar gets all the way to 100%, then the quest is done. Like you've helped him, but you don't know if it's 10 or 12 or whatever. And weirdly, that makes it like not as gamey. Like it's weird. Like you feel like, okay, yeah, I've helped him pretty, you know, pretty good. Now I'm good. And it's like the quest is done. I don't know.
Less arbitrary, I guess.
Yeah. So they just kind of do some things I really like. They've got nice like vista points that kind of have little cutscenes that show like, oh, here's a cool waterfall in the corner of this zone that, you know, otherwise is kind of useless. But
rag on your grammar for a sec, since you got me a couple episodes ago. Vista points, I'm pretty sure.
What did I say? Vista?
Yeah. You know, it's whatever, all good. We all have our quirks.
I see.
But that sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've just been doing that. I'm kind of grinding towards the end game now, because I just want to be able to kind of go wherever. Also, mounts are locked until your max level.
Huh, interesting.
Although they do give you a mount in the early game that you can use for, I think, 10 hours or something like that. And then it's like, you can either wait till level 80 or spend some money. That's how they try to get you. But it's okay. I'll just wait till level 80. It's not a big deal. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm playing a hunter. Like, I loved the fact that when I rolled up my hunter, it was like, what starting animal do you want as your companion? And it let me pick one. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So there's just lots of things I'm really enjoying about it. And I think I'm going to keep playing for quite a while. So I'll definitely let you know how it goes. What else is, you know, what else I discover about it?
Yeah.
There's like a whole end game talent tree thing. I don't know. So that'll be interesting. So,
I've always heard great things about Guild Wars 2, and I was just looking it up as you were talking. I think the first Guild Wars released 1 year after WoW. It was 2003 and 2004. So, I mean, they've both been in the game for a while, so it kind of makes sense that Guild Wars has seemingly learned some good lessons over all the years.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's gotten more development efforts put into it lately. I think I was looking at the history myself, and like the first like few expansions for the game had like multiple years in between them, and now it's like every 2 or 3 years there's an expansion.
Oh wow.
So they're kind of revitalizing it, so it's pretty cool, I think. And the game's known for being what they call horizontal progression, which means, you know, the game is really geared for hunting achievements and finding cool transmogs, which is like customizing your character.
Right.
Like, that's a big part of the game. So I'm cool with that. You know, I don't have to do high level raiding as my main content. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. Nice.
So, yeah, that's what I've been playing. What have you been playing, Wes? Pretty big, interesting. I don't know.
Both of those things, I think, okay. Because as you know, I can pretty easily get caught up in hype, and I have yet again been caught into a maelstrom of hype. I totally didn't realize that after being in early access for 3 years, Baldur's Gate 3 is releasing fully in like the beginning of August, like a week.
How did you not know this, Wes?
I hadn't been paying attention.
I know it.
I know.
And I barely pay attention.
That amazes me, honestly. But after quick, you know, 2 hours of YouTube rabbit holes and getting myself hyped up into a frenzy, I'm very excited for Baldur's Gate 3. And so to prepare myself for that, because it's being made by Larian Studios, I thought maybe now's the time that I finally go back and beat Divinity Original Sin 2. Which is a fantastic game. I've always loved it, but I haven't gotten very far in it. And it's going to be very similar to what Baldur's Gate is, except the new Baldur's Gate is just going to be more and in the D&D Faerun universe. So Divinity is, you have like a party of 4 characters, all of which you can control. You level their stats. It's RPG style where you have skills you can learn and things like that. And you can really customize your character in a lot of ways. It's a really flexible system that they have in Divinity. When you go into combat, it's a turn-based initiative combat, kind of like it would be in an actual tabletop D&D style game. So it's a really fun system. There's really fun effects with, say, if there's water on the ground, then you use a electric move, it'll electrify the water so that anyone who steps in it gets shocked. Same thing with like heat clouds that catch people on fire, freezing. You can make it rain blood and then freeze the blood so people trip on it. I mean, it's just got some really fun interactions in it, and great dialogue and quests too, as you're going on this really grand story too. As the name implies with Divinity, you're kind of trying to become a god, or you are chosen to become a god, and it's about your process, your adventures going that way. But I had gotten a decent bit through it and just kept getting stalled because it is pretty tough. I mean, people on the internet will tell you that I'm just bad, and maybe I am, but it's a difficult game, especially because I messed around with my character so much and just specced into fun stuff instead of good stuff. Like, my characters definitely aren't great builds. And I finally had the revelation after a friend who was having the same problem played through it of why don't I just turn the difficulty down, dummy? And after doing that, I am having complete renewed excitement for the game. It does feel a tiny bit too easy, if I'm being honest, but at this point, I'm so excited for Baldur's Gate 3. I just kind of want to experience this type of RPG game, finish up the story if I can, although the game is much larger than I originally thought it was.
Yeah, that's what I remember most about playing it myself. I remember playing for like 50 hours and then it was like act 3 out of 10. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so much side content, especially in the beginning, from what I hear, that, you know, I play maybe not to the same extent as you, but I love to do almost everything, you know, if there's options available to me. And the difficulty I was playing on, it was almost mandatory, because if I didn't have the experience, I wasn't going to be able to do all the other stuff anyway. So there's just so much you can do. And it's even harder for me than turning down the difficulty is going to be not doing all the side quests. But I think that might be a necessary sacrifice if I want to beat the game. But it's just a great universe, great characters. And if you haven't played it and it goes on sale, it's definitely worth it. I mean, I loved the game, even not finishing it and just getting to Act 2. So like, even if you don't beat this gigantic game, it's definitely worth the experience.
Nice. Cool. That's a great one. I need to get back into that myself. I think that'd be good.
Yeah. And then we could do the impossible task of lying to ourselves and saying that we could beat a co-op campaign together.
Yo, I would love to do that, man. We should do that.
We should. I'm, you know, not sure how far we'd get because, boy, it's a long game, but write that down on the schedule. We're going to do it.
All right. Sounds good. Maybe we can do a special podcast episode just about that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see.
Sounds fun.
All right. Well, you know, I'm already fantasizing about it, but let's go on to the special topic, Wes. Now, we have a big game today, and we could talk about Konami, who made Scramble for our special topic, but no, we know a little bit about Konami already. I thought, let's talk about some other stuff. Let's switch it up a little bit. There's a special topic I've been meaning to do. I mentioned it, I think, on our last episode, which is a company called APX. It's not a super, like, separate company. Like, it's owned by Atari and run by Atari, a division of Atari, but it's kind of something special, and it kind of propels a lot of creators' careers. So I thought this is definitely something worth talking about. You want to start us off, Wes, and then I'll end it up?
Sure, yeah. So APX, as Ben mentioned, is the Atari Program Exchange. It is an arm of Atari. And basically, it was designed to help make a bunch of software for the Atari 8-bit computers. When the 8-bit computers first released, they didn't really have a bunch of software for them, and Atari was trying to make everything first party because they wanted to kind of like keep their trade secrets to themselves. But one employee in particular named Dale Yoakum noticed that even though they didn't release anything, people were still figuring out how to make software and, you know, were trying to sell it. But those people couldn't sell it many places because they didn't have a distribution network. So he kind of saw the win-win situation of, well, what if Atari solicited these people to make games and then sold the games, gave money to the people who made the games, but then also got money themselves. So it was an interesting idea that took form in the Atari Program Exchange, where a quarterly catalog through APX was released to everyone who owned an 8-bit computer, Atari 8-bit. And it would highlight a bunch of software that customers could mail order. But then the most important part is that it did ask the readers, hey, submit any programs that you have. Some of them will be selected and you'll be compensated if we sell them. So this was a really interesting thing where, sort of after not wanting anyone else to make software for their computer, they're like, maybe we should let everyone else make software for our computers, but then we can make money off of it.
Yeah.
So it did pretty well for them, I think, for a couple of years. Several of the programs that are going to be accepted into APX and distributed that way were even good enough that Atari eventually published them under their own name. And apparently APX was sort of distinct enough that some games that had questionable licensing issues or maybe they didn't think were up to the quality of Atari games, they could kind of publish under APX and say, oh, well, that's a separate division. That's not really representative of what we make. So yeah, that's kind of the basic thing. APX also gave every year an Atari Star Award to the best game that was submitted. And apparently it came with $25,000 when you won, which seems like a lot of money now and definitely was a lot of money then. So maybe that's why, as we'll probably talk about later, APX doesn't go on for too many years before Atari kind of gives it the kibosh. But
yeah, I think it's its soul is kind of in the soul of the Atari 8-bit computer. I think it is something that really differentiated it from all the other computers. It kind of created this community of anybody that had that catalog to think, oh, I could do this. I could get one of my games in. And even if it didn't sell like amazing, some of them did. And that was like a catalyst for getting all these amazing people into developing games. And it was kind of the start for a lot of software companies and developers that we will talk about over the next few years of video game history. So super important. Just something I wanted to mention real quick. I thought one thing that was really cool about this is that unlike a lot of first party companies that publish stuff, they in APX allowed the original programmer to get credit, like their name was on it, which coming from Atari, who Activision like literally quit them like a year or two ago for that exact reason, seems crazy, like a full 180. So I was really surprised that it wouldn't all be under Atari, but they purposefully wanted this to be like, I guess they wanted, you know, as you mentioned, the liability to not be there.
Right.
So they had it under individual creators' names, but that was actually really good for the individual creator. And some of them could like make a living just off their name because they had a program in this catalog. So it was pretty interesting. And it is funny to see like some of the best games for this computer system are going to be through APX. And that kind of just shows you that like the power of this program, that games were coming out of this that were as good as Atari could make themselves. Like that's pretty awesome. And they could sell well enough so that that person could become a full-time programmer. So it's just really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a very unique program and a very like interesting part of history for Atari.
Yeah, something we haven't really seen before. So I kind of hope more developers do this. I don't know that they will, but I really like the Atari Program Exchange. I do know like I think there's something called like the Software Exchange, which is under TRS, like TRS 80 games, like published that, but it never got this big. I don't know the exact rules and regulations about that. I don't think like the individual creator was compensated nearly as well. Right. So this is pretty cool. So I definitely wanted to mention it. We are going to see APX pop up. It's like, you know, they make some of the best games for the Atari 8-bit, which is one of our better computers right now, if not the best. So we will definitely be covering lots of APX games. I think we mentioned one last episode. I don't know that we're covering any this episode, but we're going to definitely cover them a lot. So I wanted to mention it.
Very cool.
With that being said, Wes, we have to get into Scramble. I can't not talk about it any longer.
All right, sounds good. Let's get into the timeline.
Hello and welcome back. Let's hop into Scramble. I mean, I have to talk about this game. It's something I've been looking forward to playing for like literally months. Ever since I saw it and did research, you will not believe the amount of clones we have for this game. It might be the most cloned game that we've ever done. and that's saying a lot. And I just wanted to know why. Like, is it really like that amazing? And I mean, it obviously is, but
yeah,
there's like a lot more to the story as well. Like I found out kind of doing research for today's episode that, so this is by Konami, and for whatever reason, they decided not to copyright the code for this game.
Oh.
They only copyrighted the visuals and audio design, which meant that you could just steal the code, change the visuals and audio slightly, and then you were legally allowed to sell it.
Well, that explains it. Yeah.
So that's one part of it. I do believe they sued, I read that they sued a company called Omni, which we have seen Omni as well make clones of stuff. And I'm not sure that the results of that lawsuit, if it was settled or if Omni lost or won, I'm not sure. But I think that's one of the reasons why we have so many clones. This game is also super important for a lot of other reasons. For example, we mentioned Defender a couple weeks ago being like the first of the side-scrolling shooter genre. And this is the second, and it came out the same month as Defender in February. In Japan, I think Defender was by Williams, which was a US company. So Konami's over in Japan, and I'm sure they saw it at the trade show and made this game as a response. That's my guess. It could have been, you know, a completely unique idea and it just happened to be similar, but I kind of doubt it. But this game's different in a few different ways, and the ways in which it is different remind me a lot more of the genre that's going to come, where it's kind of this scrolling shooter, but it has some levels in it and it has a sense of progression where the ship is moving constantly and you're not necessarily like propelling it across the screen. It's more of just like the screen is scrolling all the time and you can kind of move forward and back slightly like you would in a bullet hell game or something, but you're not in total command of where the ship is going. You can't stop the screen scroll, for instance, whereas in Defender you could. So that is a lot more reminiscent of this future genre of games. And it's kind of known as being this genre-defining game, this genre-starting game, that there wasn't anything quite like it beforehand, and we're going to see a lot of these games coming out afterwards. So I'm really excited about this one. Let me hop into what the game looks like, how it plays. Basically, you've got a ship on the left side of the screen that is flying to the right. As I mentioned, the screen's scrolling constantly, so if you don't push the propulsion in any way, you'll just be like kind of moving at cruise speed, if you will. So the screen's always moving no matter what, but you can kind of propel the ship forward slightly and kind of decrease the propulsion slightly. So you can kind of move from the very left-hand side of the screen to the middle of the screen and back and forth as much as you want. As you're doing this, the scrolling is happening. So the ground underneath of you is moving and changing. There's actually kind of mountains that spawn, and towards the later game, you kind of go into a base, and there's like little passageways you have to fly between. So there's almost like a platforming element where you kind of have to dodge things depending on the height of your ship.
Hmm.
And this is especially important because you would think, well, if that's the case, why not just stay at the top of the screen? Because then everything's always underneath of you, right? If there's like a mountain, just don't go in the valley, and then you don't have to worry about that, right? But the thing is, it's really hard to attack anything when your ship is far up on the screen because, like, you've got two different attack types. You've got this bullet that shoots horizontally, right? Kind of like your laser beam blast from Defender. But then you also have a bombing mechanic, which is more meant for destroying things on the ground. And it kind of has some momentum, so when you hit the bomb, it kind of goes forward a little bit and then it curves straight downwards. And if you're up high on the screen and you throw out a bomb, it takes so long for that sucker to get to the bottom that you might as well throw bombs before the objects that you need to hit at the bottom even show up on screen, because they just take so long to get there. Whereas if you're close to the ground, you can throw out a bomb and it immediately hits that target on the ground because it doesn't have so far to fall. It just falls straight down and it hits. So you're actually encouraged to try to fly close to the ground. And this is a big strategy, I think, for a lot of the best players. And this is also important because you have to hit stuff on the ground. It's not like an optional activity. You have a fuel bar in this game, and the fuel bar is actually is kind of going to be what decides your fate. Like, obviously, you have to dodge a lot of stuff on the screen, but if you don't hit these fuel canisters at the bottom of the screen, they're like on the ground that you're passing over. If you don't hit them, you will run out of fuel and die. So you have to hit them. And in fact, the best players ever of this game, they go until the fuel canisters spawn so rarely that you have to run out of fuel. Like, that's kind of the ultimate end of this game. You can keep replaying it over and over and over, but eventually the fuel respawners respawn so slowly that you eventually will always die. So that's something I never dealt with because I never got that far, but that's what happened. So you need to hit these fuel canisters is what I'm saying. So you have to be able to bomb stuff on the ground with accuracy, and it's just so hard to do it from up high, and that makes the dodging of the mountains and kind of going through these passageways all that more relevant and part of the game that you have to get good at. So I think it really adds to the game. That bombing mechanic, when I first saw it, I was like, well, that's kind of nice, I guess. Like, it's just whatever. Like, I thought I would just play it like any other shooter, which is just don't get hit by stuff and just shoot down some aliens. But because of this fuel meter actually mattering in this game, unlike a game like Rally X, right, where the fuel meter is there and doesn't do anything, this one, it really does, it's super important. And by the way, you can hit the fuel canisters with your normal horizontal gun. So if you're at ground level and you're like a foot above the ground, you can shoot your just normal machine gun kind of shot and take them out. And that's actually a good way to get rid of enemies too, because a lot of the enemies will start on the ground and kind of fly up at you. So you can take them out before they even have a chance to leave the ground, which is cool. So I like that about the game. That's something a little bit different. But I think what the game is most known for and what is probably most important about this game is it has levels. The levels are continuous, so it kind of feels like you leave a stage and then the screen continues to scroll and then you scroll into the next stage. It's not like there's a loading thing in between these stages. But basically, there's 6 different stages throughout this game. I'm not going to go into every single one because it's pretty much just an aesthetic change where maybe the enemies are a little bit different. But you start out pretty much flying through mountainous terrain. Then you kind of go through a cave where there's like a ceiling. And then you go through a base, which has both a ceiling and a floor, but also walls where you have to go in between very narrow passages in the walls before you finally get to the end of the maze, or end of the base, they call it. And I think you have to destroy like one boss character, which you just shoot down like a normal. It's not like a boss fight. It's just, it's more like firing a missile into the Death Star or something. Right, like it's right. not a boss fight per se, but you do that and then the whole thing repeats. But that's what the game is, and what's cool about that, again, like we have this scrolling graphics that continuously scroll, but there's so much variation to it that we just never really seen before. I don't know how they programmed it, honestly, with the limitations of memory that we have at this time. It's just kind of incredible. So there's a lot of cool stuff about this game. I think that's kind of all you need to really know about it, though. I don't think there's any other kind of main mechanics or anything. So let me go into my ratings, and then I'll ask you what you think, Wes. But for gameplay, I ended up giving it a 4 out of 10. I didn't go like super, super high or anything. I played this game myself, and I can tell you, Wes, it is very hard. It doesn't look hard when you watch good people play it, but man, is it hard. I struggled a lot. I only ever got to stage 2 out of 6, and I played for a good 15, 20 minutes. I think part of it was I was up too high in the beginning. I didn't really realize that strategy was staying low, but even still, it was just very hard to get fuel consistently and pay attention to everything that you need to pay attention to on the screen. I don't know really why it was so bad. I think it's just because the game's moving, it's going at its pace,
right?
And it's hard to keep up with everything that you need to do. I think what helps in that regard is that these levels aren't randomly generated from what I can tell. I think every time I played, it always started the same. So if you continue to put quarters into it and continue to play, you would get farther and farther just because you're kind of learning the levels and knowing what you have to do. So there's kind of a nice feeling of progression that way. I just think it was just a little too hard from the get-go. Like, my first three lives were over in like a minute, and I was like, well, I barely saw this game. So I think it's just a little too hard from the start. If they had just gotten that progression to ramp up nicely, I think it would have been a lot better. From what I hear, the very last level, which is the base, and maybe right before that, where it has these very narrow corridors, there's no enemies really in that section. It's just flying the ship, and it's apparently really tight and really hard. So I don't know if I would like... It almost feels like the platforming of the ship movement is as big a game, if not bigger, than the actual combat of like shooting things. So I don't know if I would like that as much, but it's different. You know, we haven't really seen you having to fly a ship through tight corridors in our timeline before. It the only thing I can think of is like a dodging kind of game,
right? Yeah,
but this kind of doesn't feel like that. It's very unique. So it's all right, but I just think the difficulty was a little too high. Otherwise, I thought the game was quite good. It's not quite as fast-paced as something like a Defender. I think the enemies weren't quite as fun to go up against. A lot of them just kind of, they don't really go towards you. They just kind of will fly either straight upwards or straight from the side. You're not really a part of their life. They're just like flying through, and you're just trying to take them out before they accidentally run into you. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was like a bad game in any way. I thought I had a lot of fun with it, but it could have been better. I think the enemy design could have been better, and I think maybe just a little bit less speed on the screen scrolling. I don't really know. I mean, we have to play a lot more of these games before I figure out what works and what doesn't. This is the first time we've ever seen anything like this, so it's hard to say. But for whatever reason, it just felt a little too hard, and maybe something else could have been done, especially maybe about like the bombing mechanic. Maybe having a little bit more control over those bombs would have made it easier. I don't know. So I can't quite put my finger on what exactly I didn't like it to stop it from getting like that 5 out of 10. But I think the difficulty did play a big factor. But moving into graphics, this is another big one. Because the graphics of this game are pretty awesome. Everything is like a multicolored sprite. Your ship has an animation about its exhaust flames, has like a 2-frame animation. I love seeing that. We've seen that in Defender. I hope more games do that because I really love it. Even the ship itself, it kind of looks like the edges of the wings are kind of like blinking or something. Like there's a bit of an animation there. And when you're moving up and down very quickly, it almost feels like the whole thing's turning, which is kind of cool. I love the designs of a lot of the stuff on the ground. I think the ground looks really good. It changes color as a base color, and then it has kind of an outline for that top layer of ground. And it changes between the stages, but some of the fuel tankers or maybe installations of like aliens on the ground, I think they look really good. Some of like the alien installations almost have like a shading to them that kind of makes them look like they're in shadow or something, and that there's like a light source, and I'm like, hey, that's awesome. I love seeing that. I think it just overall is very colorful game. It looks good. There's a starry background sky with blinking stars. The explosions are very strange because they are multicolored and like multi-frame animation for the explosions, but there's kind of like these white, or usually white, they can be any color, but these kind of lines coming out from the explosion that almost make it look like some sort of like there's lightning in the explosion. I don't know what's going on there. It looks a little weird to me. Like even when you blow up a fuel thing, that same explosion animation happens, and it just feels a little strange. So there's some weird designs here, and I think where they dropped the ball was definitely the enemy ships, because some of the enemy ships are very boring. They're all multicolored. You got to give it some credit, but they're just not very memorable. I think the most memorable part of this game is your ship, which is great, but nothing else was really special. So for all those reasons, I ended up going with a 4.25 out of 10 for the graphics. I think they're really good. But I think Defender is definitely way better because like the kind of the multicolored laser defender is so cool, and the way that enemy ships exploded into like a million pixels and stuff was so cool. We just don't really have that here, so it's just a little bit more blocky, but I mean, it looks great. I'm still, you know, floored with a 4.25 out of 10 at this point in the timeline, so that's still great. For sound, I ended up giving a 3 out of 10. There's one musical interlude that happens when you start up the game, but otherwise it's kind of normal sound effects. Nothing really spoke to me as far as the sound. I don't think there's too much to say here. It sounds like a generic space game, arcade game from 1981. So I couldn't go too high there, but because of the music, I bumped it up slightly to a 3. For relevance, I have to give it a 9.25 out of 10 for relevance, because, man, this is kind of like the beginning of a new genre.
Yeah.
And I think it will really influence a lot of games that we're going to see throughout the rest of the year. This and Defender, but I think this game is even more well-suited to clones than something like Defender. Like, just from doing my research, I know, like, this game will get ported to computers and stuff way faster than Defender does, because Defender's movement is just so unique and specific, and it's hard to replicate that anywhere else. But this game, you know, the movement is just the side-scrolling graphics, and a lot of things can do that. So it kind of becomes a catalyst for a lot of different people to take their own crack at it, and some of the clones of this game are just going to be absolutely amazing. So it really starts a whole kind of new movement and genre of video games for us. I think there will be kind of, if I look back at the timeline of history of the video game, you know, history of video games, I think about kind of games that were in that Space Invaders era, games that were in the Galaxian era, and I think it's going to be games in the Scramble era. I really think it's going to really change the types of games that we see. So I had to go high with relevance, and overall I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. That's not the highest we've ever given out, but it's definitely a good score, definitely way above average. And we're only in February still of 1981. So I'm super happy with Scramble. I love checking it out. What do you think, Wes, compared to Defender especially? Like, they're similar, but I think Defender is very uniquely different. And Scramble reminds me a lot of other games. And I think that's kind of a sign.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and sometimes I do love those really unique, weird things, which is why I, you know, loved the Fender so much. But this is just going to inspire so many more things. I mean, as you're describing the gameplay and I'm looking up pictures of it, it just reminds me of, if not other games that I've played, at least like a level in every Sega beat 'em up I played. Like, I can specifically remember a TMNT, like a Mutant Ninja Turtles beat 'em up that had basically a Scramble level in it. So it's very cool game. Even if the sounds are a little meh, it's definitely impactful. And I'm really curious to see what comes next. I know some of the things that come next and I'm excited.
Yeah. By the way, I want to say also why it's relevant. Before this, Konami, it was a company that made games, but they weren't a big game company.
Yeah.
And I read a quote from the founder of Konami, or one of the co-founders, who said their most important game that they ever published was Scramble, because it's kickstarted Konami as we know it today.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's another reason why it should be very relevant and everybody should know this game. So,
absolutely.
Huge one.
Very cool. Well, now that we've looked at that, why don't we talk about the many clones that you mentioned? I'm not going to mention all of them. The list will be up on our site, but we have a ton that are just called Scramble by companies we've seen before, like Stern, Lijak, and Sicaria. And then we have a few other ones with more unique names, like Kamikaze by Euromatic SA, and Rambler by GGI, and Space Trek by Video Game SA. And there's a bunch more. And again, we'll have that full list up on our website.
Yeah, real quick, I want to mention the Stern port of this game was the official one released in the US. So when you see like a cabinet, it's almost always the Stern one, because at least for me, a lot of the YouTube videos I'm watching are like American videos. So that's the most common one in America. And by the way, the cabinet itself, I didn't think was anything too special. So I don't have much to say there.
Yeah. Don't touch a book by its cover, you know?
Yeah. But let's move on to some console games. I don't think we've really come across many console games so far in 1981, just some 2600 titles, I think. But like last year, we're going to be talking about the Odyssey 2. And for the Odyssey 2, they don't have month dates that are known. So I just kind of grouped them into a couple different groups and put them all around our timeline as best I could, just, you know, best guesses. So this is our first group of three that we're going to look at in 1981. We've got four games here for you. The first one is called Stone Sling, otherwise known as Smithereens. And I wanted to cover one of these console games, but man, this one's just kind of like an angle guessing, shooting each other with cannons game. And it wasn't very good.
Yeah, and then we have another one that we were thinking about covering called Secret of the Pharaohs. But that, unfortunately, was kind of just this weird head-to-head two-player game where you got hints of how close you were to the magic brick within this very bad-looking pyramid. And it was just like a little to your left, a little to your right, until you found all the bricks. And that was kind of it.
I mean, it's unique.
Right? Yeah.
And then next up here, we've got one called Electronic Table Soccer. And this one's, I mean, it's like a soccer game, I guess, but it's like also, it kind of acts kind of like foosball, where you're kind of controlling a whole line of characters at the same time. It does use the Odyssey Man, but I'll be honest, the Odyssey Man is looking a little dated in 1981.
Yeah.
So this one wasn't really worth covering.
And then we have one called Keyboard Creations, aka Newscaster. And this one, I barely know what's going on here. The advertisement for it says televise your own messages using the Newscaster video pack. So it sounds like it's just kind of like a teleprompter simulator. I really don't know. But, you know, we can always count on the Odyssey 2 to bring interesting games, even if they aren't ones that we necessarily want to play.
Right.
And we should say that all four of those did release on both the Odyssey 2 and the Video Pack.
Yep, Video Pack was the European version of the Odyssey 2, but it had like its own launches, so it can get confusing. All those were for both. But let's move on. We got a couple of computer games here next. We got one called Roller Coaster by an unknown developer. I've seen dates ranging from between 80 and 83 for this game. But it's on the Commodore PET, and I wanted to mention it because it's a pretty interesting management game where you have to defend a roller coaster from bandits and repair the ride whenever parts get blown up before the coaster crashes. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool.
That's some great theming. And then we have another computer game here called Creature Venture by Highland Computer Services. It was for the Apple II, and we don't know exactly when this released, but it did have a copyright of 81. And it was a fairly simple graphical text adventure, and it kind of had a similar graphical style to Mystery House, where it did the sort of zoom-in graphics whenever you had examined an object in a room. And this actually did have some simple, quote-unquote, animations in it, so it was fairly interesting, but still not great visuals.
All right, let's move into March of 1981, Wes. We've done it 2 months in already. I'm excited to see what March has to bring. Let's keep with the computer games for now. We're going to talk about just a couple more. This one's called Space Eggs. It's by Nasir Gabelli under his company. Actually, this one was published by Sirius Software, not under his own company quite yet, I guess. But it came out on the Apple II and the Atari 8-bit and was a clone of Moon Cresta for home computers, which I did cover Moon Cresta when it released on the arcades. And unfortunately, this isn't as good as the arcade version. Moon Cresta is a Galaxian game where your ship could kind of combine with three other ships, and you could shoot like five bullets at a time. So it was pretty cool.
And then we have one here called Battle of the Bulge, Tigers in the Snow by Strategic Simulations. This was for the Apple II, TRS-80, and Atari 8-bit, and it was a hex grid-based strategy war game, but it was pretty similar to Computer Conflict that we've seen before.
Yeah, same thing goes with the next one. It's also by Strategic Simulations called Battle of Shiloh. We have to mention these because they are the best strategy games coming out on computers right now. They're all by Strategic Simulations, but they're all similar. This one's another hex-based strategy war game, you know, very similar to Tigers in the Snow and Computer Conflict. So we've got just other games we want to play today. So otherwise, we would have done it.
Yeah, for sure. And one of those other games that we want to play was the first one that I reviewed today. Getting back into the arcade games, it's Astro Blaster by Sega and Gremlin. And boy, I was very excited. I had never heard of this one before, but after Ben and I looked it up, it's got some crazy stuff going on to it, mainly in the visuals. Yep. And this one we do know released specifically in March of 1981. So again, kind of like Scramble, the cabinet looks pretty simple. You know, it's got the wood grain, of course, and some nice light blues, but it does have some great images of the ships too, which the ships, I'm just going to mention right off the bat, are very well detailed in this game. So what's on the cabinet actually kind of looks like what's in the game, which is really great. Had some funny flyers where there was a whole bunch of like people wearing cowboy outfits and carrying pizza, watching a kid play the game, because that's how popular it was apparently going to be. And it had synthesized speech, which we always love. And just an interesting little tidbit I found when I was looking on the Wikipedia page for this game is that the current world record was set in 1982, just a year after this release. So Gus Pappas is his name, and he must have been pretty damn good at this if the record still stands.
I feel like that could be shady, Wes. I don't know.
Either it's shady or nobody else plays this game anymore. So true. After 1982, he just set the record and he was good to go. And also, Astro Blaster, the cabinet appears in the video game Shenmue, which is going to come out on the Dreamcast.
That's cool.
Which is a series I've always wanted to play, so I'm sure when we eventually get there, I'll have to take a look for it. But apparently in the game, it's out of order, and you can't play it. All right, but moving on to the gameplay of Astro Blaster. With a spacey-sounding name like that, you know it is a Galaxian-style game, where you have to face multiple waves of enemies. Instead of the Galaxian dive bomb, though, the enemies do this sort of jittery, like moving in circle kind of pattern, all while they're staying in formation. And they sort of slowly make their way down to you while firing missiles at you. There are other types that fly straight down at you and do loop-de-loops as the waves go on, but then some have that more Space Invaders kind of motion. Another difference between this and Galaxian is that you actually have a fuel meter that slowly depletes as the game goes on, again, similar to Scramble. So you have to try and beat the levels quickly, and you also, of course, get bonus points for however much fuel you have left at the end of each sector. And each sector is comprised of a couple different waves, so it's usually fight a couple aliens, and then go through an asteroid dodging stage, and then you complete the sector. You can only have one shot on screen at a time, and you have a temperature gauge at the bottom of the screen as well, so if you fire too quickly, your laser overheats and you can't fire temporarily until it cools down. And you also have a time warp, which I honestly couldn't tell if it was a consumable that you get every time you get a certain amount of points or if it depleted your fuel, but it basically makes all the enemies in the game move in slow motion for a short amount of time. So as I mentioned, after the first few waves of enemies, there is a wave of asteroids that fall down from the top of the screen. You can blow them up, but then you can also dodge them, and there's yellow asteroids that will fall as well that if you shoot them, they give you some fuel back. But after making it through the asteroids, you dock with this incredibly cool looking refueling ship that shows up, and then after getting all your fuel back, fly to the next sector and do a couple different waves. And I do mean different waves, even though there were similar enemies in a lot of these, they were all pretty different from each other. There were apparently in the full release of this game 35 different waves, and I know some of them were similar, but that's still a lot going on. And of course the asteroid waves were similar, although I think they got faster each time, but I just was pretty impressed with how much differentiation there was there. And another really interesting gameplay thing that I don't think we've really seen done before is that This game had secret bonuses where if you did certain things while playing the game, you got extra points, and it would just say secret bonus. So when the game first came out, I'm sure people had no idea how they got those points. But I was watching somebody play it who knew a good bit about it. And there's things like if you eliminate all the enemies on the screen from left to right in order, you get extra points. And if you dock with the refueling ship without touching any control inputs, because you have to be in the center of the screen to successfully dock, you get extra points there too. So just really interesting that they had all these like secret ways that you could get more points. And just a cheesy little thing that I loved: when you get to the score screen, you input your initials by shooting the letters until it says your name. So I love stuff like that. But that's the basic gameplay. I mean, basically a Galaxian type game with some interesting stuff going on with a fuel meter and a temperature gauge for your weapon. Let me get into my ratings now. I may be going crazy again, but for graphics, I gave this a 5 out of 10. This game, I was not expecting to look this good, considering I had no idea what it was. And to be fair, the background is somewhat plain. It's just some twinkling white stars on a black background. But the rest of the game looks killer. One of the best looking elements is your ship, which is sort of like a beefed up Y-wing almost from Star Wars. It has blue and orange tints to it, but the colors aren't super bright. They're a little muted. So it feels like it's going for a little bit more of like a realistic kind of feel instead of the a little bit more cartoonish things that we usually see in arcades. And it really works for this. I mean, it has sections of the ship that are black to make it look like it's being shaded from a star that's off screen and lighting it. I was just really impressed with how detailed this looks and the fact that the game runs pretty smoothly as well, even with that on screen. It has sections on it that light up red periodically, which also look really good. The info on the screen is fairly simple graphically, but it gets all the information across as far as your fuel, your lives, your gun temperature, and all that. And there's also lots of different types of enemies, as I mentioned. Most of them are a bit just kind of like abstract shapes, but there are some that look like birds with flapping wings. There's some that look like the classic Enterprise Star Trek ship. So there's a lot of cool stuff there. And the asteroid section I really loved because it's very fast moving. The asteroids themselves are just kind of these weird, like staticky looking balls, but still it all looks really smooth and moves very fast. So I enjoyed that a lot. And then my favorite part of the graphics, if you couldn't tell from my description earlier, is the refueling ship. This thing is just massive. It takes up like half the screen as it flies down, and it does kind of look really jittery as it flies down, to be fair. But it has a great design. It's got these huge like radar dishes on either side of it. This nice balance of black and colors that give it that same effect where it looks like it's being shaded and lit from a star that's nearby. And like, I don't know, I feel like we've never got something that looks like it's being lit from an angle before in a video game like this. It's really weird, but looks great. And to me, it just looks like something out of like a mid to late 80s. Top-down shoot 'em up game. Like, it looks a little out of place with some of the rest of the elements of this game, but it's very cool. It even has this cool like pincer docking collar that closes on your ship when you successfully dock with it. That's really the reason I'm giving this 5 out of 10. It just looks fantastic. And Ben, I also mentioned it, may have to make it into our Sprite Hall of Fame on our website. But moving away from the graphics, let's talk about the other aspects of this game. For sounds, I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. Thankfully, Astro Blaster does have some pretty great sounds to back up its visuals. The most prominent feature is definitely the synthesized speech, which sounds great. Thankfully, isn't too annoying. It kind of just warns you about your fuel being low, about your laser temp being too high, and then also mentions refueling is ahead and it says incoming asteroids and stuff like that. Because it's so robotic, it really does feel like a ship computer, so it fits into theming well. And there was also a voice in the attract mode that called for more pilots to help defend the sector, which is pretty neat. The other sounds are pretty good too. Nothing really standing out here. There is a humming background noise that gets higher pitch the more enemies you shoot each wave, which I liked, as similar to kind of the Space Invaders heartbeat. And there's also some classic laser and explosion noises, but really it's the synthesized speech that makes this unique.
Alert, alert, invader, sector 1, player 1, to battle station. Warp activated. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
For gameplay, I give it a 4 out of 10. It still is, you know, just pretty much a Galaxian game, but I was really surprised that the addition of the fuel gauge and temp meter didn't make me hate it. I thought those would suck, but I was pleasantly surprised that they were actually implemented pretty well. They felt challenging, but not so unfair that I didn't want to play it. They were just a little bit of like nice extra pressure and stuff to have to think about. So I enjoyed that. The game felt really fast, even though you can only have one laser on screen at a time. So the pace of the game really made up for that. I also loved all the enemy variations that you fight. And my favorite part, honestly, was probably the asteroid dodging section, just because it's a really nice change of pace. And I like that you can still shoot in that phase too, so you can really make your own path through the asteroids. And I think the secret bonuses were probably a huge point of interest when it first came out. I can just imagine being in an arcade, playing this game a ton, getting a secret bonus and being like, what did I do to get that? How do I do that again? And how do I min-max that so I can get the most points and get on the high scoreboard? I just think that's a really fun thing to add, especially for an arcade game. Moving on to relevance, I gave it a 7 out of 10 here. I don't think Astro Blaster really ended up being a gigantic hit, but it is coming from Sega Gremlin, which are pretty big. And I feel like I have to give it some credit for how unique its ship designs were. It looks so ahead of what we saw in 1980. It's kind of crazy. And so overall, that left me with a 4.25 out of 10. Astro Blaster is a difficult game, but it's a great game with fantastic graphics, entertaining sounds, and some solid gameplay to boot. It's, you know, still copying off of Space Invaders gameplay at the core, but I feel like it reinvents itself just enough with the fuel gauge and the different stages to really keep it fun.
Yeah, I think it's maybe one of the first games in history that was actually trying to do realistic graphics.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out, like, why do these look so different? But it's definitely, they tried to make it feel somewhat realistic, and it's an interesting take that we don't see a lot.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. Well, let's move straight into my next review. It's called Boxing Bugs by Cinematronics. And if the last one was any kind of, you know, realistic game, this is the exact opposite. I think the kind of concept of this game is that it's an opposite game of Star Castle. In the game Star Castle, which Wes covered a while ago, you're kind of trying to bomb like a space center in the middle of the screen or something like that and kind of break through its force fields. And right. This one, you're inside the force fields trying to keep things away from your force fields. But what you're keeping away is pretty weird. I don't know how they thought of the theming for this, but I'll try to describe what the game looks like. So in the very middle of the screen, you've got what kind of looks like a severed arm. You know, instead of a hand, you've got a boxing glove. And the boxing glove is quite detailed and looks amazing. And then the arm is just like a rectangle, right? You can imagine that. And when you fire your boxing glove, it comes out like, I don't know, a gadget on an Inspector Gadget, like when his arm flies out. Or it's kind of like these cross-hatched like metal bars kind of propel the boxing glove out and hit stuff, right? But then what's super weird is on the opposite side, so on your, like, where your elbow would be if you were a severed arm, on that side, you fire out bullets that kind of look like stars. So on one side of this kind of cannon thing, you've got a boxing glove. On the other side, you've got, like, shooting projectiles. And what do you do with all these things? Well, in the game, as I mentioned, you've got kind of this force field shield around you, and you're trying to defend that from bugs. The bugs can only be hit by the boxing glove. So when you hit them with the boxing glove, they will die, and you can get rid of them. However, the bugs aren't attacking you directly. What they're doing is that there's bombs on the screen, and the bugs will go towards the bombs and drag them over to your force field and then light the fuse. And your boxing glove doesn't move the bombs. It doesn't interact with the bombs at all. You have to use the other side of your cannon, like your elbow part of the arm, to fire out this star shot, and that actually will hit the bombs and push them away. I think you can kill bugs with the bombs, like if they explode where the bugs are. But that's like where your two different shooting mechanisms come from. One can only hit the enemies, and the other one can only hit bombs. And basically, you're just kind of going back and forth between attacking the bugs and pushing away all the bombs from your base so that they don't blow up. Basically, if a bomb blows up, it will remove part of the force field where it blew up. And then if a second bomb gets dropped there and explodes, that's when you'll lose your life. So essentially have one freebie for every part of your force field, which is kind of like an octagon. So you could have up to 8 freebies, I guess, before the next one will definitely kill you. And that's kind of all the game is. There is another stage type. I only ever saw this in a video. I never got to hear playing this, but there's another stage type where the only way to hit the bugs, like the bugs are behind a wall, so the only way to hit them is by shooting bombs, like using the shooting part of your weapon to push bombs over to where the bugs are and then let the bombs explode. So that's another stage. I don't think there's any more stages, but those are the two I saw. And that's kind of what the game is. It's super weird. This has got to be up there with one of the weirdest.
Oh, yeah.
But I love it, and it's very unique. So it's just the next game in my line of, like, killing bug games, I guess, because I just did Roach Hotel not too long
ago. That's right.
But what can I say? I'm addicted to these games, I guess. So let me get into the ratings. For gameplay, I give it a 3.75 out of 10. It's pretty fun, I'm not gonna lie. It's not too hard, it's the difficulty's just right. And it's pretty fun to spam the glove boxing and hit these bugs. I really enjoyed it. And then the strategy part of also pushing the bombs away was fun. It was just a fun game. It was like chaotic. There's probably 3 or 4 bugs on screen at a time. They're all moving bombs towards you, and the bombs are like, you know, the fuses are going off. So it's very chaotic, but it's fun. So I actually enjoyed it quite a lot. Not quite as much as Scramble, because I think Scramble just had a little bit more variety. This is kind of, you know, there are kind of bonus ship bugs, if you will, but they don't like attack you anyway. They just kind of fly around, and if you can hit them, you'll get some extra points. So there's no real extra strategy going on. You know, when the levels progress and you get to that next stage, it's just like there's more bugs, or they're faster, or the bombs explode faster, or whatever. It's not like you have to do new techniques. It's just the same thing over and over again, just faster. So I enjoyed it, but there's not a whole lot of depth to the game. The graphics, this one was kind of hard for me. I gave it a 3.5 out of 10. That's a really good score. I mean, Scramble definitely looks better, but this game looks really good as well. This is a vector graphics game that is in true color, in true color. It's like vector graphics colors. I don't know. I think we've seen that before. I can't remember, but it looks really, really good. Like with all vector graphics games, the like fluidity of all the motions and how detailed the characters are, it just looks amazing. And in this game, there's something extra special, which is that I think after maybe your second round or third round, there's a cutscene that happens where a bug gives a gift, I guess, to a human, which is a jack-in-the-box. The human turns the jack-in-the-box, and when the jack-in-the-box goes off, it punches the human in the face with a boxing glove. And there's just like a cockroach on screen dancing this whole time. And it looks absolutely incredible. It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen in a game. And it's the only cutscene we've ever seen in a game that's like this fluid and this detailed. Like, the only thing I can think of is in Pac-Man, there were those cutscenes where they kind of moved across. But because this is vector graphics, like the man falling down, it's not like there's frames that it's dealing with. It's just like vector graphics works by like displaying mathematical functions on screen or something, and it's just so fluid. It looks amazing. So I think that kind of helped boost up the graphics rating just in and of itself. I love the cinematic. So I think the game looks great, and it kind of is almost sad in a way, because we're getting towards the end of vector graphics games. I know we've mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast, but I did do a quick look up, and Cinematronics is not going to be around that much longer.
Oh, no.
I think there's only two other vector graphics games that they make before going under. So this is one of the last, and I think we're kind of getting to the point where developers are like, you know, this is as far as we can push the graphics now with vector graphics, because the pixel raster displays are just getting too good and too realistic that the vector graphics won't be able to keep up anymore. So I think this is going to be one of the best looking vector graphics games that we are ever going to play. So for that reason, I wanted to give it some points too. For sound, there was some musical sound effects in here. As I mentioned, that cutscene, the guy's like kind of working this jack in the box, and so the that thing plays, and that was great. Works out really good with the gag. Throughout the gameplay, there's a lot of boxing related sounds, right? Like, so there's like a bell, like at the beginning of a boxing match, there's a bell. The bombs have explosion noises. And there's some weird like popping sounds when you fire your weapon. It's not a normal laser gun sound. So it's pretty unique, but it's not like super great. I just ended up giving it a 3 out of 10 for sound, because there's some music and there's some sound effects, but it wasn't anything super special. Relevance, I had to give it a 6.75 out of 10. As I mentioned, it's one of the last, or, you know, it's up there with one of the last vector graphics games in all of history. So I wanted to give it some points. I do think the gameplay is super unique, super cool. Although I found out this game isn't going to sell too well, which actually makes it a very rare game to collect nowadays as one of the last vector graphics games. So, you know, I couldn't go too high with it, but I wanted to give it some points because it is by Cinematronics. It was like a big flagship game for them. It just didn't really take off. And overall, I gave it a 3.5 out of 10. That's only a quarter of a point less than Scramble. But I think they're both phenomenal games for many different reasons. Scramble's just very solid, too hard. This game, the gameplay felt a lot better to me, but was more repetitive. So up in the air, I mean, Scramble looks amazing with raster graphics. This game is as good as we're going to get with vector graphics, and there's something extra special about vector graphics that you just can't really replicate anywhere else. So they're both great in different ways. This one scored just a little bit lower for me, but I really enjoyed it. It was super weird, but we love to see those weird games, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have to say, the cabinet art of this game, there's not really a whole lot going on. On the bezel, there is a bug with four arms, and he's got boxing gloves on all four arms, like he's gonna, you know, he's squaring up at you. And so I appreciated that as well.
Nice. Well, cool. Yeah, we definitely love the weird ones. We definitely love the stuff that Cinematronics does. So I'm glad you took a look at it, because we definitely had to talk about this one. All right. Well, let's move on with some honorable mentions now. We've got Coco Loco by Petico SA, which is a two-player version of Pac-Man, and it had an added boost button, but when we took a look at it, it actually didn't look like it was too great, or at least anything we wanted to cover.
Did have some clones, though. We've got Coco Loco by Resell SA, which is just a clone of the Petico version. We also have Coco Doble, or Double Coco, I don't know, by Petico, which was a two-player version of Coco Loco, with players sharing the same screen or using two screens, which is pretty cool.
And then we have a game called Defend the Terra Attack on the Red UFO, very specific, by Uko or UKO and Arctic. And We think that this was actually originally made back in 79 on Galaxian hardware, but then Uko went out of business and a few years pass, and then Arctic buys the stocks and then sells this game in 1981. So that's why we're talking about it now, but it isn't a great game. And it's also going to be cloned by Sub-Electro as Exodus.
Probably looked good in 79.
But yeah, yeah.
Yeah, too bad it didn't come out then. Another one here, Imola Grand Prix by Leonte Games. Just a game that came out sometime in 1981. It's an arcade game, and it reminded me a lot of Monaco GP, but not quite as good. So it was another racing game, top-down, you know, scrolling graphics game. But we've seen those before, so nothing too special. Yeah.
All right, and then that takes us to our last game for the day and my second review. It is Laser Base, aka Future Flash, by Hoei and Amstar. That's just the two different versions of the same game that were published and came out in 1981. We had some interesting stuff in the flyer here, where for Future Flash, it says that the stars in the background of this game are actually the Arctic constellations, whatever that means exactly. And also, Future Flash has some confusing but great art on its flyer, where it's got like a space station, a planet, and then a giant monkey face in the background. So I don't think it was exactly Planet of the Apes inspired, but I'm sure it was some sci-fi novel inspiration, because there's no monkeys in the game, so I don't know what's going on there. And also, the game was controlled with a trackball. Which makes sense because Laser Base, which I'm probably going to call it Laser Base for the rest of this review, was an interesting mix of Space Invaders and a Missile Command type game. Basically, you have four bases on screen and you control your cursor with a trackball. And then when you hit the fire button, depending on where your cursor is, it'll fire out of the base that's closest to it. And you can pretty much fire as much as you want, but you do have an ammo count on the screen. The missiles fire from whichever base is closest, so you don't have to select them like a Missile Command. And the missiles also have an explosion radius like a Missile Command, but it's much smaller. And then the Space Invader part comes in that there are aliens that come from the top of the screen, fly all over the place, try to destroy your bases, and try to attack the planet below you that you're defending. If a base gets hit, you can no longer fire from it, and it gets destroyed. And then after you lose all four of your bases, the planet under you gets attacked and the game is over. If you make it through enough waves, you're eventually warped into deep space with only one ship for like a final wave, I think. And weirdly enough, it seems like when you lose bases, a lot of the times the aliens will kind of just go straight to the planet if they're on that side of the screen. And as far as I could tell, nothing happens when they go to the planet. Maybe eventually there's a critical mass of aliens landing on the planet and you lose that way. But it seems like they can kind of just go straight past you, and the main threat is them destroying your bases, all of your bases. That's pretty much it for the game. I mean, you got these four bases, you're shooting Missile Command style to blow up these aliens that are coming down from the top of the screen and also shooting at you. Let me talk about the ratings now. For graphics, I gave it a 4.25 out of 10. It is a vibrant game, to say the least. There's a lot of great colors in this game, and it seems like the color palette even swaps between waves, which is pretty cool. The players' laser bases look really silly, but in a great kind of way. They're like giant UFOs, but they have these rainbow blinking lights all over them, and they're also multicolored and pretty well detailed. All of the enemies are also multicolored sprites, and they're all pretty tiny for some reason, I guess just to make them really hard to hit. So they didn't have a ton of detail, but they were all pretty unique looking. They occasionally also decrease in size and disappear when they're flying down to the planet. My favorite part of the graphics, though, has definitely got to be the planet surface on the bottom of the screen. It looks fantastic. I mean, it looks like a moon with lots of shaded craters and mountains. But unfortunately, it goes away during the space sequence. But thankfully, the hyperspace animation looks pretty decent, too. Your missiles make a nice rainbow explosion when they blow up. So it had a lot of good visual elements to it, and I did rate it pretty highly because of that. But overall, something just felt a little bit off with the aesthetic. to me. I don't know if it's because I was coming from the realistic-ish Astro Blaster, but it looked a little cartoonish and strange. So I did enjoy it, but it wasn't really blowing me away too much. Moving on to sounds, this is a really weird one to rate. I mean, it's got a lot of sounds, but as we know, that's not necessarily a good thing. I gave this a 2.75 out of 10 because it has a nice musical tune at the beginning of each round that's pretty short. But holy crap, the sounds throughout each wave are annoying. There are so many spacey, laser, and alien kind of noises that all sound okay, but they're all constantly interrupting each other and overlapping, and it's just like a cacophony of sound. I think there was supposed to be synthesized voice in this game too, but in the version I was playing, I couldn't hear it, unfortunately. And if there was, I can only imagine that it would have added to the confusion that was going on with all the noise in the game. Moving on to gameplay, again, for whatever reason, this felt a little weird to me. I ended up giving a 3.5 out of 10. The combo of the two game types, I think, is pretty unique, but the movement of the aliens was just really fast and erratic, and the explosion radius on my missiles was so small, it felt like I just had to spam missiles all over the screen, hope I hit stuff, and didn't run out of ammo. Like, I feel like it was a missed opportunity for this to be a strategic kind of placement game like Missile Command was, because it was slower. I do really like that you have four bases and that the missiles automatically come from the closest one. And I do like that when one gets destroyed, you can't shoot from that area anymore. But combined with the fact that the aliens landing on the planet didn't really seem to mean all that much, it just felt a little weird. It was a cool idea, but I don't think it was like thoroughly executed, you know, not everything really matched up and was followed through on. For relevance, I gave it a 5 out of 10. I think Laserbase / Future Flash does deserve some credit for combining these two genres in an interesting way, but it doesn't seem like it was a super popular game. It's hard to find too much information on it, so I don't think it really influenced that much. And overall, that left me with a 3.75 out of 10. It's definitely got some interesting visuals and a cool gameplay idea, but Laserbase and Future Flash just felt a bit odd to me. There was just kind of a mismatch between the idea and the implementation. It felt like it was a little bit too fast. The sounds were kind of abrasive. The enemies felt too tiny for what I was supposed to be doing in the game. So I think it could be tweaked a little and could be really fun, but as is, it was a bit of a miss for me, but it did have some really cool visuals, especially with the way that the planet surface looked. Yeah, and that is Laserbase, aka Future Flash by Hoei and Amstar.
All right. Oh, another good one, Wes. We had pretty much all good ones today, I think.
Yeah.
All in the threes, fours, fives. So that's a good sign. also got into March of 1981, where we will be hanging out for another couple weeks. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. I mean, we covered Scramble, which is just a huge game. We're going to be playing a lot of Scramble games this year. So we're going to be going back to Scramble quite often. But Wes, you also covered Astro Blaster by Sega and Gremlin, and that had like a realistic take on the graphics, which were actually looked kind of realistic. It looked good. They achieved what they were going for, and that was amazing. I did Boxing Bugs, which was the opposite of that. Totally cartoony, but just so wild that I loved it. And then you did Laserbase and Future Flash, another space game, but this one was a Missile Command kind of variant, so definitely worth checking out. We haven't seen too many Missile Command unique takes, so I'm glad we got to see one. And we also talked about APX, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of good stuff. As been mentioned, we're in March now, so there's a lot of great stuff to come still too. Make sure you follow us on this journey. Check out our website where we've got lots of great information on everything we've covered before. Follow us on Twitter where we post announcements. And if you have any questions, feel free to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.